You're listening to the West End Frame Show.
Hello and welcome to the West End Frame Show. It's been an exciting week as a couple of days ago, I finally got to watch a live performance after 5 very long months. So lots more on that later. I'm your host and West End Frame editor, Andrew Tomlins, and I have an amazing co-host with me today. She started her professional career at the age of 11, touring the UK in the National Theatre's production of South Pacific, and she's gone on to do so many completely amazing different things. So straight after graduating from Mount View, she made her West End debut as Cosette in Les Mis. She was Gabriella in High School Musical, at the Hammersmith Apollo and on tour, tucked him in the King and I at Leicester Curve and on tour, and like me, she retired for a few years but then made a big theatrical comeback in the West End transfer of The Grinning Man, and then just before lockdown she was starring in The Wicker Husband at the Watermill Theatre, which sadly closed on its press night due to lockdown and theatres being closed. She's been doing all sorts of amazing things in lockdown but is currently preparing to tour cricket grounds in a socially distanced, family friendly actor-musician production of A Midsummer Night's Dream. Welcome to the West End Frame Show, Claire Marie Hall.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm good. That was a very difficult introduction to read.
I'm just that's a really big build-up. I'm like, I feel really good about myself now.
Well, that was just the half of it. You've done so much stuff. That was a trimmed down version. But how are you? How are you doing? To close a show on your press night is mental. But then you've also been doing so many different things during lockdown, all sorts of online concerts and online readings and all sorts of things. And now you're doing this Midsummer Night's Dream. So where is your brain at? What gear are you in? How are you digesting everything?
Do you know what? Like, lockdown was, it was a good time for me in a sense because I've never had time to do things I wanted. I've never had hobbies before, which has been kind of a big thing. So lockdown has made me embrace kind of doing all the things that I wanted to do for ages, such as all the little activities. So like concerts and actually getting to do, I did like a couple of like online Shakespeare readings. And now I'm doing this on this Shakespeare play. So things that I've wanted for ages and ages and ages, I'm actually doing now. So that's where my head's at. I'm like, I'm going after things that I want. And I'm doing them. I'm being proactive and productive. It's good.
It must have been really strange though, because I was reading another interview that you did recently and you were saying how, because you were in Newbury just before this, and I love the Watermill Theatre because it's so remote and I love going just for one day because I feel like I get to escape. But I know for you guys and your inner show there, it literally is kind of this theatrical retreat almost for a few months where you're just with lovely theatre people and, you know, and
so
ducks
beautiful.
And green.
Oh, ducks and geese and dogs.
So, I know, oh, gorgeous, gorgeous. But to be there when this was all happening must have felt a bit disconnected to it. So then suddenly to then receive that news on your opening night that the show is going to have to stop must have been really weird.
Yeah, it definitely was. I think we kind of thought that it wouldn't hit us where we were. Like nothing, kind of, even like the shops were still stocked and people were just milling about their business. And you just read the news, or my husband, who was in London at the time, would tell me all these different things. And I was like, oh, it's never going to come here. It's fine. And then obviously when it did and I came back to London, I realised the full extent of the situation. You're like, oh God, like we were so removed from it all. We're lucky in a way.
And you got to do, because theatres were meant to shut on that Monday, but you got to do your show. They were kind of advised to shut. The advice was so loose. But you got to do that opening night. Yeah. But that must have been the weirdest.
We were so lucky.
Performance. What was it? What was going through your minds there? Was it emotional? What was it like?
I still don't think we realised the extent of the situation.
Right.
Because we got the news just before we were about to go on. So the artistic director of the Watermill actually went out before the show and kind of explained the situation. Was like, if you want to leave, we would completely understand. Like, it's completely up to you. And nobody left, which was lovely. And we did the show. I think nobody was really thinking about it. And then obviously towards the end, we were emotional because we worked really hard to put on this show. And I know it was, especially the creative team, it's been their baby for years. So yeah, that was really strange. And it was quite sad. There were a few tears, I'm not going to lie.
Oh, I can imagine. I think I'd have been crying in that audience. I think a lot of people, there was a few shows that happened on that Monday, and I think people kind of knew that was going to be the last show they were performing or the last show they were seeing for a long time. It's the weirdest thing, a situation that nobody would ever think they'd be in.
Yeah. I don't think people realised how long it was going to be. I think in our heads it was just going to blow over in a few weeks and we'd get back to our business, like not realising probably for a lot of people it's the last time they performed this year. Like I thought it was going to be the last time I performed this year. I'm not going to lie.
Until this little project comes along. I mean, if I told you 5 months ago that you'd be touring cricket grounds across the UK, I don't know what you would have said to me. But
Especially, I'm not an outdoor person. I'm like, I'd hate camping. I've never been. But oh, me, I hate neither. Bugs.
Me too. So how did this come together? Because it's this newly formed theatre company, Scoot Theatre, right? How did you come to be involved? Well, how did it happen?
I was just really lucky. I'm so grateful for it. Basically, Aaron Sidwell, who I've known in the past through various friends, asked me if I wanted to do it. Because I'd done a project, Barred from the Barn, with him, or for him, recently. And then I did a concert as well for the barn, which he'd reached out and asked me if I wanted to do. And then this kind of came about. He's like, where do you live? I was like, I live in Bromley. Why? He was like, fantastic. Well, we live in Dartford. We can pick you up on the way if you fancy doing this project. I was like, great, I would absolutely love to. So yeah, I was very lucky.
And talk me through the concept. Explain for people who don't know anything about it what it is.
I knew you were going to ask this question. I got asked to answer this question for the EPK recording on Friday, and I'm so bad at it, but I will try. I'll try again. Right, okay, here we go. So there's kind of like, for me anyway, there's three separate storylines going once that all intermingle. So you've got the four lovers, which are Lysander, Demetrius, Hermia and Helena. Hermia and Lysander are running away to the woods to elope and get married, followed by Demetrius, who is in love with Hermia, and followed by Helena, who's in love with Demetrius. So they're called the four lovers, and they run away to the woods and kind of all get lost. And then you've got an argument going on between, I want to say, two chief fairies. It's probably the wrong word to use, but two chief fairies, Titania and Oberon, in which Oberon plays a trick on Titania to kind of get her back. And then the third separate storyline is you have a group of townsfolk, the Mechanicals, who are putting on an amateur production of Pyramus and Thisbe. And they're rehearsing on the same night. So this all happens in kind of like one night. And basically, due to magic and like a mischievous fairy called Puck, there's lots of bedlam and mayhem and mistaken love and lots of room for comedy.
And how many of you are in the cars?
There's six of us. So we're all doubling up.
I was going to say, there's a lot. Midsummer Night's Dream is a big show with lots of
Trish
roles.
Trish is playing three parts. I mean, bless her. She's playing Titania, Helena, and I want to say Snout. Is she playing Snout? Yeah, but she's playing three parts either way.
And who are you playing?
I'm playing Hermia and Snug.
Amazing roles. And it's actor musician too, right? So we've got music in there. Is it new music? Like how's
what? No, we're doing, there's like a little bit of a pre-show, not to give too much away, but we're doing some covers of songs. We've got like two fantastic violinists, and then Aaron's a great guitar player, Joe can play the banjo as well. And then you've got me, who's like trying very hard to play a guitar and to play a melodica. I'm like trying. And then we've got percussion and glockenspiels and stuff as well. So we're trying to incorporate music into it, just through little snippets of playing throughout the show as well. So it's very peaceful.
It's going to be atmospheric. And how do you, you said you're not an outdoor person, you're not a camping person. How do you feel about the prospect of performing Shakespeare in rain? Today it's glorious. I'm sat here sweating, but actually to do it in heat must be really difficult as well.
Oh, I'd rather be in heat than rain. I'm not going to lie. I'm grateful for that. I perform gigs outside, so I'm sure I'll just get on with it. Once you're doing it as well, and you see, once you're performing, I'm like so happy to just be in front of an audience again. I think I'll just forget about the weather. I'll be like, who cares? There's people
Yeah, literally,
and
give me hail and thunder. Yeah, it gives us theatre.
Nothing will stop me.
Yeah, who cares? Literally. It's something special, though. I love seeing outdoor theatre. You know, Regent's Park Open Air Theatre or different places. It's a really different dynamic. But to see something that you're literally doing in cricket grounds, but making theatre happen, is just going to be so unique and so special. I think everyone will really appreciate it.
Yeah, I think people just want to go and see theatre, don't they? I mean, we've had watching digital theatre is fantastic. Don't get me wrong. I think it's made, you know, it's opened doors for theatre in that way. But getting to actually watch it live is something we've all missed.
Well, you've been watching lots of digital theatre. I've been watching lots of stuff online and talking about it on this podcast. But I definitely, the last couple of weeks, I've felt I'm at the stage now where I want to go and see real stuff. And this week, I got to go to West End Musical Drive-In, and we'll talk about that later. Yay! But to sit here, people singing, and to be a part of an audience is just, you know, it's the best thing ever. It's that shared experience.
That's why it is theatre.
Exactly. Right, we have lots to talk about today, so we're going to dive in and talk all things stagey, and I've got lots more questions to ask you as well. So coming up in today's episode, we are going to be discussing the West End Musical Drive-In. Plus, there's lots of news about Dirty Dancing, there's more news from the Barn Theatre, Broadway HD, and lots more. Okay, so first up, we are going to talk about the theatre news, and we'll get the tricky, almost depressing industry update out the way first. So the latest stuff that's been going on. This week, the Chancellor confirmed that the furlough scheme will not be extended for creative industries, despite Oliver Dowden revealing that guidance of theatres reopening without social distancing may not come until November. So it's this, for me, it's a pretty... straightforward common sense issue that we have here of how this whole industry is not allowed to reopen, yet we are no longer supporting the people within it. So I know this is industry, people often have to go and get other jobs and do other things, but
there's no jobs.
But that's not exactly, there are no jobs, and there's a whole industry worth of people that are looking for the jobs. It doesn't make what I don't understand what the government actually thinks. Everyone's
I think
gonna
they think
do.
That we could go and like, and I mean, as well, especially like actors, but I know as a fact, like we're all freelancers and we're so used to just mucking in. If we're not performing or we're not creating, we go and find another job. But unfortunately, there's a whole load of people who are looking for those jobs and fighting for those jobs at the moment. So there's, you know, the ratio of people looking for them and the amount of jobs there are, it's just, what can we do? I think they're expecting us to go and do those jobs, but there's none left.
And of course, usually lots of people who work in entertainment go and do jobs in hospitality and in the events industries, and they are also pretty non-existent at the moment. And one thing that I know when you kind of retired, you were doing PR, weren't you? And I think about this, you know, there's lots of theatre PR companies, lots of lovely people that I've worked with over the years, and they have no shows to represent. They've got no money coming in. You know, it's everybody. It's just, I don't know. Well, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. It's a whole entertainment industry.
Totally.
God, it's depressing, isn't it?
it's a difficult situation, but I'm glad that stuff like, you know, opportunities are starting to come to the woodwork.
People will find a way.
To do things. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we will get through. But also other really kind of, I guess, news that we knew was coming was about Panto season. So this week, Qdos, our biggest Panto producers, began a consultation process with its partner theatres about the viability of each of its shows. The company has said that due to a lack of clarity from the government, it is currently impossible to plan for Panto season. And right now, at time of recording, we know that Pantos in Belfast, Aberdeen and Edinburgh have been cancelled. But of course, the list will continue to grow. I've been saying a lot on this podcast about how it's all to do with the length of time that is being announced for the green lights.
Yeah, exactly. There's not enough time for people to plan a show in that time. People need to know in advance. They need ticket sales.
I know. So we're looking at 2021 now, but it's so sad. I just think Panto obviously is so magical and creates so much work.
It's the theatres as well. Like, there's a lot of people that rely on Panto to supplement their entire year, more or less. It's their biggest earner. So it's devastating for theatres.
Absolutely. And I just think it gets so many people into theatre as well. You know, so many young people, it's their first experience, and that's what makes them fall in love with it for a lifetime.
Yeah.
It's going to be a very strange Christmas season.
It's just
season.
Sad. It's very sad.
So you were recently doing some stuff at the Barn Theatre, right? That's how you said, that's how you met Aaron. But was it all online stuff?
Yeah, so I've never actually been there. I met some people from there for the first time. They came down to film our EPK on Friday. What's it called? Ben, who's edited my Bard from the Barn video and was on my interview when I was doing an interview for a concert I did there. And he was like, it's fine, it's so weird to see you in person. I feel like I know you really well. I was like, God, it's so, like, I can't believe I'm actually going to go there. Like, this theatre that I've worked for quite a bit over lockdown and not actually been to.
I know, but they have been doing amazing stuff in lockdown. And this week they announced full casting for their production of The World Goes Round. So we've got Jenny Fitzpatrick, who was in Tina, Nick Barstow, who was also going to be MD, and he just did the intermission series with Alice Byrne as well. Ryan Carter was in Motown, the boyfriend, has been on this podcast. Is great, and more all can be in the cast. So I think I haven't been to the Barn Theatre either, but I think I'm gonna have to make my first trip to Cirencester to go and see this show, because I'm really looking
forward
to that.
That's a fabulous cast.
I'm really looking forward to that. What's really interesting about your CV, Claire, is that you've done so many different things. You started out in these big musicals, doing kind of these iconic roles, but then you went and you took your break, and when you'll come back, you've been doing really interesting work. I mean, The Grinning Man, we need to talk about that, because
it's beautiful
production and just such unique staging. And then you've done all the jobs you've been doing, have been working with really interesting people, really different venues. You'd start, you know, stuff at the Soho Theatre. So has what gets you excited about theatre changed? What does get you excited? What kind of things do you go, oh, I really want that. That's something that I really want to do.
Yeah, I think my focus has changed. I think that's a growing older thing, maybe. I like to be creative now. I think I was too scared to be when I was younger. And I think for me, it's kind of, I want to do like the more interesting, not interesting, that's the wrong word, but kind of, I'd love to do more plays, for example, or things that haven't been done, like new musicals, things that, you can find yourself. You find the character yourself. I've become more adventurous, I think, and more daring as I've grown older.
And so Grinning Man must have been a really exciting thing to be a part of, because I went to see it, and it's like a show that embraces theatricality and storytelling in a different creative way, and there was kind of puppet, just the whole way it was staged.
It's so artistic.
So artistic. And you were covering a few roles. Was it hard? Was it difficult and challenging, because it was so unique?
I just remember, I think it was not necessarily challenging. It was great. Like, it was so exciting. It was kind of everything I wanted to do when I came back. It was my first big job back as well, so I was so thankful for it. But the characters are all so different and strange, and I mean, just a joy to watch and play.
Yeah.
Just like everything about it was fantastic, like fantastic cast, fantastic music, fantastic creatives. Like, yeah, absolute blessing to be in that.
Tell me about, when were you like, right, I'm retiring, I'm going off to the PR. What happened? Did someone say something? Did someone upset you? Who offended you?
I'm off. Forget this.
What happened?
It was like, I think it was a build-up of a few years. I think I was doing these roles that I didn't feel wasn't necessarily the roles. It was just I wasn't getting what I wanted out of it all. Like, the enjoyment factor kind of went for me. And so it became a job. And I was doing these things that I think if you're going to be an actor, especially, like, it's not worth it if you don't enjoy it. Like, it really isn't. It's not worth it just for the money at the end of the day. Like, you have to love it. And I just wasn't there. And then I think it got to a point, actually I was doing Panto, and my Aladdin I got on with really well. And he was like, because I was considering going back to uni, And he just said, well, why don't you just do an internship somewhere and see if you like doing something else first? And he said, like, my publicist is looking for someone. Do you want to, like, try out with them? And so I just fell into PR, and that's how I fell into celebrity PR then.
Yeah.
And then just ended up leaving. After 3 months, I was like, yep, I'm off.
And then how long was it until you got Itchy Feet?
I think 3.5 years, 3.5, 4 years. Like, I'd joined a firm and become a publicist. And I think I remember going to my best friend's birthday party and being around all these kind of creatives and actors. And I was a bit like, God, I really miss this. I think that's what kind of kicked it all off. And then from then, I like met my husband. I think we were probably we've been together a year. And then he just said, like, if you miss it that much, because I think it got to a point where I wouldn't stop talking about it. He was like, just go back to it. What have you got to lose? Exactly. I was like, just shut up and get on with it, basically. So yeah, that's what happened. I just decided, okay, well, yeah, you're right. There is nothing to lose. So let's go back.
But then that's interesting what you're saying about how it's been different and how almost because you're
much more passionate.
Like, right, I want to do different things, but you kind of know, it's almost like you turn your back on it before. I guess it's almost kind of empowering in a way.
I would like, I'd not advise, but I'd recommend it to anyone if they're feeling discouraged by the industry. You know, after a break, I'm more enthusiastic and more passionate about this than I probably even was right at the beginning of it, because now my eyes are open to it and I'm still going into it full force. Like, I really, it's not a bad thing. Like, people really kind of like, it's like I failed. It's like, it's not like you failed. Go away. And if you don't want to come back, you don't want to come back. If you do, you come back.
Yeah. There's this thing about success and what is success, and people kind of thinking they're doing really well and they have to, you know, do more and more and more and more. And actually, you hear all different people who have all different paths, people who broke into it really late, or people who went, you know, go off and have families and take 5 years off and then jump, then can absolutely bounce right back. Some people think, you know, if I turn up one audition, then I'm never going to work again. And it sounds like that's really not the case at all.
No, it's not. Well, it wasn't easy coming back, but at the same time, it's like, again, I get more enjoyment out of it now than I ever have done before. So yeah, everyone's got a different, everyone's journey is different.
Totally. Very quickly, in other news, talking of the Watermill Theatre, so married couple Caroline Sheed and Michael Gibson will star together in an outdoor Acto Muso concert production of Camelot at the Watermill Theatre.
I know, amazing!
You're not going to be able to go because you're going to be off on tour.
I'm gutted!
But I love going to Newbury and I'm going to really try and go and see that. Film productions of Billy Elliot, Miss Saigon, Les Mis, and 5 Andrew Lloyd Webber titles have been added to Broadway HD in the UK. Quite a lot of them are the ones that were shown as part of that The Shows Must Go On YouTube series, the Andrew Lloyd Webber ones. If you missed any of them, now's your chance to catch up. It has we've got some movie news now. So it has been confirmed that a Dirty Dancing sequel starring Jennifer Grey is in the works.
That's amazing!
Literally a narrative sequel. It's not a spin-off. It's not said. It's literally going to continue the story. So interesting.
Patrick! What about Patrick?
I know. Aww. Yeah. I'm very, very intrigued to see what that is like. But maybe it will pay a tribute to Patrick in some way.
Maybe. Like, well, maybe it'll be her daughter and maybe it's carrying on from that. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe it's like a different generation. It's literally going to carry on. I'd be interested. I'm intrigued.
And then, of course, this is all linking to this. I've got a link for everything, a segue for everything. They're talking of Shakespeare. Channing Tatum. Now you're like, where am I going with this? Channing Tatum is working on a musical movie about Lady Macbeth.
No. That's amazing. That I'm definitely intrigued.
Okay, time for some show talk, and it is so nice to be able to talk about a real live show that I actually saw in real life.
Woo!
So this week I went to the West End Musical Drive-In. So on this podcast before, I was talking about West End Musical Brunch, and the team behind West End Musical Brunch have teamed up with the Drive-In London to create the West End Musical Drive-In. So it operates kind of similarly to the West End Musical Brunch. It's a big commercial celebration of musical theatre. And for each performance, they have different musical theatre stars. So this week we had John Owen Jones, Sophie Evans and Oliver Saville, the three amazing names. And they came out and they just performed all the classics. It's a drive-in. So you drive in, you tune in on your radio to the frequency that they have, and you can have the sound in your car, which I love because you can turn the volume up and down and get the levels just right for you, which is such a treat. And I sat there before it started and I turned to my friend and I just said, you know what, I haven't seen anything for 5 months. Just give me the classics. Give me all the big ones.
Give me sometimes, the stagey stuff.
Sometimes you're like, oh, do I really need to hear, you know, Bring Him Home Again?
Yes, you do. Yes, and you actually, do. It's a classic.
But the answer is always yes, of course.
And it's John Owen Jones singing it as well.
But yes, this was, yes, more than ever. And to sit there and, you know, Sophie open with Oliver Saville giving us Dancing Through Life. And then Sophie Evans came on and did Somewhere Over the Rainbow. So
I saw
badly.
Her in Wicked. She's got a beautiful voice.
She's got a beautiful, beautiful voice, and they were all just stunning. And it's so exciting to be there because the audience are obviously all sat in their cars. And after each song, you can't really applaud. People were applauding. People were out their cars on deck chairs and stuff applauding, but everyone's honking their horns. So after all the numbers, you just hear this sea of honks, all different pitches. And it was just glorious. And one of the most amazing bits was one song where John Owen Jones is encouraging everyone to kind of sway their hands. And lots of people put their windscreen wipers on. So the windscreen wipers were swaying from left to right, which was such a good idea.
See, theatre is evolving.
literally. And it was really magical. As you arrived, there was people dressed up as Elphaba and Elsa and Dear Evan Hansen who were kind of greeting you every kind of turn of the corner as you got in. So it was just stagey and joyous. And then the second we arrived, all the staff, just like with Musical Brunch, all the staff were super friendly, just looked so happy to be there, couldn't be more helpful. But it's all contactless free, so you put your ticket up at the window and they scan it for you. And then when you arrive, you can also, there's like a, you go online on the website and you can order food and it comes straight to your bay. So I got an ice cream, and you know how exciting it was to get an ice cream? We had the spoons tucked away in the lid, like a proper
like
theatre ice
school.
Cream. I know, just like being back in the West End. It was really special, and I just thought they did an amazing job. They really are keeping theatre alive. Carl Mulaney, the host, was so funny and did a few numbers as well and was just utterly brilliant. And I was just so sad when it ended. I was like, I'm not ready to leave. I want to stay here for Act Two. It was amazing, really amazing. So if you want to go to Western Musical Drive-In, their next show is in a couple of weeks on the 29th of August. But I think it's pretty much sold out. It's Leighton Williams, Trevor Dion Nicholas, Shan Acho, Maya Constable-Breed. So try and get tickets for that. They've got a six special, which is already sold out, but they have said they'll announce some new dates soon. So keep an eye on westendmusicaldrivein.co.uk. It's just, I love things that are kind of commercial, because there's so many people out there who go to the theatre once or twice a year. You know, it's been a lot of money for the whole family and they really love it. And, you know, they really are kind of those audiences, those dedicated audiences, those loyal audiences who tell their friends and spread the word, people who truly love theatre. And I think for those kind of audiences, this is such a treat. You know,
it's really
people who like theatre on a commercial scale. And it's really a clever idea. I think the driving concept works brilliantly, and I would definitely go to more driving stuff for sure. Have I sold it?
You have. I want to go.
Yes. So talking of Les Mis, so John Owen Jones is obviously really well known for Les Mis. And another beautiful segue, you made your West End debut in Les Mis.
He was my Valjean. We had Drew Sarich and John.
Oh my gosh. Because you were literally, you went into the show straight from drama school, right?
I was very lucky, yeah. So I think I graduated the September, but I found out, I started rehearsals for Les Mis in the June. So just before I kind of graduated, I left Matthew, which was amazing. Kind of like, yeah. And also like, it was a big thing for me because I wasn't a classical or a soprano singer. I was always a belter through college. So it was a real surprise to me. But yeah, it was a hard role, but I wouldn't change it for the world.
Well, how did you deal with the vocal side of it then, suddenly being a soprano?
It was hard work. It was definitely hard work, I'm not going to lie. I definitely wasn't the best Cosette, put it that way. But
no,
yeah,
I didn't believe that for a second.
But I made lifetime friends on that show. Like, my maid of honour was Cassie Compton, who was playing Eponine on that show. And then Gary Watson was my Marius, and he was one of my groomsmen for my husband. So... yeah, it was a special time for me.
But at that age, was it overwhelming? Because I know now maybe even more overwhelming for people because of the social media element. It kind of goes boom.
Oh yeah, this was before social media.
And this was kind of just before that, but still, that show has really loyal fans, and people are still posting things online about it, and you know, there's forums and YouTube and all stuff. To land a role like Cosette is a big deal, and to be so young.
Yeah, it was that. Well, I think it was probably the Hamilton of our time kind of thing, or the Six of our time.
Totally.
It was the thing that everybody wanted to be in. Like, at least like on my kind of musical theatre course in Mountview, it was one of the things that the majority of people kind of like, I want to do Les Mis. So yeah, it was a big deal for me. I was really lucky because I think I went in with two other people from my year. So yeah, Ben and Natalie were in it as well. And then there was Alice Fern, who was a couple of years before me in Mountview. She was in it as well, so it was kind of like a bit of a Mountview clown. It was really nice.
Mountview does Les Mis.
Mountview, it was like Mountview fourth year is what they used to call it.
Yes. Before we go, bring it back to Midsummer's Night Dream. So what moments are you most excited about? What bits of the show are you excited to do? There's so many iconic moments.
Speak Shakespeare. I'm so excited. This is like one of my absolute long time sort of like dreams is to be in a Shakespeare play. I am so happy. I literally just get out there and speak some Shakespeare and like hope people will kind of understand me and don't think I'm rubbish. that's probably it.
They won't. So people need to go. So Midsummer Night Dream is touring cricket clubs from the 24th of August until the 4th of September. And they have the best website URL ever. To get tickets, you need to go to cricketdream.org. I love it.
It's cricket themed as well. We're in cricket whites and everything. It's great. Such a good idea. Yeah, it's cricket themed.
Oh, that is so clever.
So clever, isn't it?
I need to go online and work out which one's closest to me.
We're going to Wimbledon. Come along to Wimbledon.
Okay. I'm on it. Where can people find you, Claire, on social media?
On social media? Oh, God. So,
that's the hard question.
I know. On Twitter, I'm definitely at ClaireMarie612. On Instagram, I think I might be ClaireMarie_Hall, but that could be wrong.
Okay, double check the episode notes. I'll make sure your Instagram's in there. People can go and follow you and check you out. Thank you for doing this. This has gone so quickly. I feel like we only just started. But good luck. Good luck with rehearsals and with the tour. I'm so happy you're getting to do it. And I very much hope that I'll be there and get to see some Shakespeare. I can't wait. We'll do. Thank you everyone so much for listening to this episode of the West End Frame Show. Make sure you subscribe, and if you enjoyed today's episode, it'd be amazing if you could leave a cheeky little Apple Podcast rating and review. Our interviews podcast In the Frame continues this Friday with Broadway actor Josh Lehman. It's such a funny and very honest episode. Lots of amazing stories about lots of shows that he's been in on Broadway. Groundhog Day, Wicked, Blood Prom, Finding Neverland, so many juicy stories on that one. And make sure you catch up with last week's episode with Janie D2. We always love hearing from you, so make sure you follow West End Frame on Instagram, Twitter and Facebook. And I'll be back next week for another stagey catch-up. Thank you, Claire.
Bye.